हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत वराधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So when one gives up jnana, karma, and vairagya prayasha, and engages in devotional practices, then the obstacles of jnana, karma, yoga, and vairagya cannot pull one down. Therefore, it is established in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.42, Bhakti pareshanu bhavo vikratir anyatra chesha trika eka kala. Devotion, direct experience of the Supreme Lord, and detachment from other things. These three occur simultaneously for one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, devotional service then covers everything. It takes care of everything. If devotional service is being performed, then, as it said, nothing else needs to be performed. The difficulty is for us to understand what, I mean, we understand, okay, chanting, that's obvious. You know, anything direct, that's obvious. Difficulty comes is that then we'll think, oh, so ideal, well, nothing. So this would mean, basically speaking, I live, you know, a temple lifestyle. Because then I'm doing nothing, you know, in the way of jnana, karma, vairagya, all these different things. But at the same time, as it's the Shastra's been saying, is perform one's duties. So the point being made is that whatever one's doing, if one's it's in connection with Krishna and one's trying to please Krishna, then there's no extra endeavor. And if it's done where it's not connected to Krishna, then whatever it is, because this basically covers everything, jnana, karma, yoga, and vairagya, right? It doesn't leave a whole lot. Then that means it'll be prayasha. Right? It will be over endeavor. Right? So the point is these are the things that distract us. So all our knowledge, we're interested in knowledge. Knowledge is all in connection to Krishna. We're interested in work. And results, the work and results is in connection to Krishna. We're into yoga, and that's all in connection with Krishna. Right? Vairagya means we're giving up the material concept, accepting the spiritual, then everything's connected to Krishna. Situation doesn't change. It's what is the purpose of the endeavor. Right? So that being there means it's devotional service. If it's not connected, it's not devotional service. And then it has to be one of these categories. And anything in these categories is over-endeavor. It's not like, oh, there's a certain amount of material endeavor that's okay, and beyond that is not okay. No, material endeavor is over-endeavor. And spiritual, that's not over-endeavor. Because that's the natural, that's the norm. The prayasha for attaining pratishta, or fame, is the lowest of all kinds of prayasha. Srila Sanatana Goswami has stated in the Hari Bhakti Vilas. Even if one can give up all material desire, the desire for fame is very difficult to give up. This desire for fame, which is compared to stool, is the root cause of all anarthas. Therefore, one should carefully avoid touching the stool-like desire for fame. Right? So we're taking this desire for fame, and then it's a matter of, you know, equal opportunity. Everybody can do whatever it is that way, you know, because it's prestigious to do all. You understand what we're dealing with here? We're dealing with that which creates all the other kinds of over-endeavors. Right? Because for pratishtha, then you have to have some quality. Right? You're not going to get famous for nothing. Right? Right? Unless you're, what is that guy? I can't remember. Maybe if you're Albert E. Newman or something, maybe you can become famous for nothing. You know?
He's famous for Mad Magazine.
But he does nothing.
Smile on the cover.
That's it. You know, that's it. You know, so the point is it's by knowledge you become famous. It's by the results of your endeavors that you become famous. Right? It's by your vairagya you become famous. Does that make sense? So if the need for fame, you have to get it somewhere. So that means you have to engage in the others. This instruction is extremely serious. The devotee should follow this exclusive duty with special care. Right? Yes.
One senior devotee also shared with me like that there is a temptation that if I become famous, then my preaching will increase.
But why should it increase?
Yeah.
They have that understands. No, those whose preaching is increasing, they're the ones that are becoming famous. It's not that the fame is making it. You understand? It's just like what you say, you know, how you say. The person makes the endeavor, that endeavor becomes successful, right? Then they become famous. But it's not because of that fame now they'll be more successful. No, the two don't have anything to do, connection with each other. You know what I'm saying? People may know you, but if that's the point, if you're working from the point is nobody's heard of you, so therefore no one will take you seriously. But if they've heard of you, they'll take you seriously, right? If you want to take that point. But the point is then for that to actually be, because it's not this. Because it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. That's the difference. Prabhupada, it didn't matter if it was good or bad publicity. It's publicity. People know who we are. And once you know who we are, then they'll inquire, and then you can explain. You know what I'm saying? But if it's only good, is good, then that's pratishtha. Does that make sense? Because we're presenting pure Krishna consciousness. Some people will appreciate that. Some won't. So you can't go by, we can only have good responses from people. Because the point is that if you have the concept that there's, devotional and non-devotional mentality or inclination towards piety and inclination not towards piety, then that means you're always going to have these two classes. So to expect that everybody will like you, then it's not real. In logic, it's called jalpa. Right? We have prajalpa. So jalpa is that position where you say stuff that sounds good to everybody. Right? So you're not actually saying anything. You're just placating all the different sides. And therefore, it seems to be. So that's called jalpa, right? When that gets more extreme, and it's really doesn't even do that, right? Then it's called prajalpa, like really jalpa. Does that make sense? So this idea of, you know, this one says this, that, let's compromise, you say something in the middle, this and that, that's called jalpa. You understand? You're going to get those who support, you're going to get those who don't. The point is as long as those who are the sadhus, they support, and the ones that are materialists don't, then you're fine. But if the materialists support and the sadhus don't, you have problem. Does that make sense? Yes.
Isn't the downside of name and fame the desire for adoration?
Well, it's just that everything else comes up because the discussion that the section he's giving is on prayasha, endeavor. So it means if you endeavor for fame, then you're going to have to endeavor for the other ones to get it. So in other words, you're going to increase. That is a quality one may have. So that's may not be very useful, but it's a different discussion. Does that make sense? The discussion here is on endeavor. Because that means, endeavor means you're going to spend time and intelligence doing something. So that means, prayasha means you're wasting your time and intelligence. Right? So if you're looking for fame, then that means then you'll spend more beside, means if you're only looking for money, you're going to put in the time for money. And it doesn't have any extraneous elements. Right? But if you go for fame, then you have to endeavor for fame and endeavor for money, or fame and renunciation, or fame and, you know, does that make sense? So that's why it will cause the others. Right? Like that. Because adoration basically comes from karma. It means fame and adoration are the same thing. Because you have distinction, adoration, and profit. So that's what you're dealing with. Right? So distinction is special like this, you know, your knowledge or like that or family. Adoration, that will be what people will appreciate you for that. Profit will be what you'll gain from having that. So they're natural things, but they also are connected to dhanam, janam, sundarim. Right? Dhanam is your profit. Janam is your, how you say? No, that's sundari. Yeah, distinction. Like that. So that would be used in that category. Does that make sense? We're taking the specific detail here is that because Rupa Goswami in Upadeshamrita has defined utsahan or enthusiasm as endeavor with intelligence. Right? So that's very necessary. That to get any progress in performing your vaidhi, then you have to be enthusiastic. So that means you have to put in the endeavor, use your intelligence. When that becomes more mature, then it will turn into rag, but it's still endeavoring with intelligence. Does that make sense? So this is showing that where you can waste that endeavor.
So if somebody's motive is tied in with karma yoga, vairagya, whatever, then they're wasting their time if their motive is on the wrong.
If it's not for devotion for Krishna, then that's the waste. It means even if it's very nice, see the difficulty when we pick out a quality that we'll take as bad, the quality is any quality not connected to Krishna is useless. And any quality connected to Krishna is useful. Because the point is, let's say the person's very nice, he gives in charity, he cares for people. But he thinks it's his money and he's the one helping the people. So even though it seemingly he has good qualities, technically he doesn't because it's only the modes of nature that are taken care of. The modes of nature by his previous karma have put him in a situation where he works for these nice works. So it's only temporary that he'll manifest those qualities. Right? After some time, once he becomes big and famous or some other element, something else changes, his business fails, his family runs off, then you may not see the manifestation of those qualities because different modes will work. So even the good, so that's why the quality itself is Krishna. It has to be seen though in connection with him. So the point is here is that, again, anything connected to Krishna is useful, anything not is useless. So this is about endeavor, that the endeavor shouldn't be useless. So how to see that your endeavoring in those areas isn't fruitless. So. This process of worship without prayasha, again, has two different kinds of applications, for householders and for renunciates, making varnashram favorable to devotional service. The householder should pass his life engaged in devotional service, free from prayasha. They should earn and save only to easily maintain the family members. They always remember that worshiping Hari is the only purpose of life. Then they will never fall into illusion. And the renunciate should not save at all. He should maintain his body by daily begging alms and thus engage in devotional service. They should not stay in any enterprise. By entering into enterprise, he is at fault. The more he worships the Lord with humility and simplicity, the more he will understand Krishna by his mercy. So it's whatever is the occupational duties, that's what you situate yourself. So it doesn't matter. But the principle is that you see it in connection with the Lord and are dependent on the Lord, like we were discussing in the morning with the surrender. We identify ourselves as servant of the Lord. We are, see ourselves in relationship to the Lord. We're always, you know, Krishna is our maintainer, Krishna is our protector. So that's the same whether it's a grihastha or not. The difference is the renunciate doesn't endeavor for any of those facilities as such, while the grihastha will. But they're only just, you know, what is necessary to maintain. And also that what's necessary to just maintain, that's also according to your particular social status. So someone from a very wealthy culture background, they're just maintaining maybe more expensive than someone who's from a simpler background. Does that make sense? You know, so it just depends upon what is your standard. Like that, yes.
You had problems in the past trying to level out
Yeah, you can't. But the difficulty is in the bourgeois environment, how the bourgeois came up is that they didn't have so much money. And then through the, if there is any stability in a state, then they'll get money. Right? And then when they get money, then they will naturally, because of this pratishta, they will live in the same lifestyle and activities and facilities as the nobility, right? Or the, yeah. And so the intellectual class and the nobility class, that's where your authority is, right? And so they have to work under that. Now, once they have, but the point is because money is their medium, is their goal, you know, is their identity, right? It's their sambandha, abhideya, and prayojan. So then once they get to that position, they're not saying, well, why don't I live like the Brahmins? No. Now it's because they have that money, they're moving in the same social environment, then they want to do the same things. You know what I'm saying? It means whenever there is the empire is developing or expanding or protecting itself, you don't have these problems because it's very obvious what the leadership is doing, right? They're going out there fighting in battles and all those things like that. You're running a business. So you can obviously tell the difference. But when it's peacetime, you know, which it should be, then they make money, they rise up. But then because there is no social distinction in that the nobility works on dharma, while the vaishya class works on artha, so they can't tell the difference. The point is one has money and power, and I have money and now therefore power, so we're the same. So they can't sell, there's cultural differences. You know what I'm saying? So that being the basis, then the difficulty comes up is that when we level, we will level from the bourgeois perspective, which means that everybody has to have the same amount of money. Not that everybody's equal and they have the same facility according to their service or nature. That would be too sophisticated. You understand? Because then everybody will live differently. You know, there's a Brahmin, he wants to live really simple. He'll have nothing. Another Brahmin needs a little bit more. He'll have something more. You know, the administrator may have more than that. The businessman, he makes it great. But if you're a Vaishya that doesn't make money, and you just are a gopher, you know, gopher? Yeah, go for this, go for that. It's also, yeah, go for it. It's also, gopher is a kind of animal. It's like, it digs holes in the ground and stuff. But a gopher means that you do all these things. So they're very responsible and very short-term, obvious results like that. The vaishyas are very good for that. But specifically, you choose vaishyas that aren't making money. You understand? They're vaishyas by mentality, but they don't have the karma to make money. So you engage them. So, like that. So, everyone's going to have a different kind of need. But the problem is because the living entity is attached, he wants always more. You know, so if anybody for some reason has more, by whatever reason, then that's not equal. So equal means that it's got to be exactly equal. But that would be like, you know, how you say, you're going to eat 5 chapatis and Bhima Sen is going to eat 5 chapatis. Right? Or you have to eat 50. One or the other. You know, it's got to be equal. So it becomes an issue. It becomes a philosophy rather than just a way of life. You know what I'm saying? Because if you really wanted to do that right and bring it to its perfection, then everybody would sit down, everyone would have exactly the same bowl. You come along and put, you know, your 1 or 2 spoons or whatever it is that you're putting in the bowl, and then prasad servants finish. You eat that. When that's done, you go wash your bowl and you put it away. But there are monasteries that do that, right? They're called Buddhists, right? So there is such things. But then you'd have to go to there. But they're not saying that. No, it has to be, I get whatever I want, you know? And as long as someone doesn't have something I want that I don't have, then that's okay. I can have a little more, everyone can have variety, as long as they get. But if anybody has something, then it won't work. So that's the difficulty. There's no discrimination, because that's intelligence. Does that make sense? So then everything gets lost. Does that make sense? So you have to be very, very careful. Is that therefore the renunciate, he'll have his way of doing things, and the grihastha will have theirs. You know what I'm saying? So it may be that the renunciate has more facility. Maybe the renunciate has less. Or maybe one grihastha has more, another one has less. You know, one renunciate has more, another has less. It doesn't matter. The python sadhu was laying on the side of the road. He was fat. I'm sure there are grihasthas that are thin. He's getting more than they're getting. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Yeah. You're feeling thin. If you're ever worried about thin, just, how you say, if you're ever worried that you're too thin, just look up pictures of Auschwitz. Then you'll know you're not too thin. You're doing fine. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's not our philosophy. The philosophy is that here, he says, this is the point. They should earn and save only to easily maintain the family members. Right? In other words, they don't make an endeavor that's beyond what it takes to their sadhana and take care of the family and then their proper allotted time of work. Because to get more money than that, they have to work more. Where's the time going to come out of? It's going to come out of sadhana or family time, right? It's not going to come out of somewhere else, right? They're not going to take it out of their sleep, generally. You know, or the guys that would take it out of their sleep and work, generally we don't see them. Like that, you know? So the point is, therefore, just what easily maintains the family. It means it's comfortable. Because the point is what's easily maintained for one person, that may be some hundreds of thousands of dollars. Someone else, that may be tens of thousands of dollars. He makes that money easily, and that's what he lives at. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter what it is, because otherwise we'll have to say, no, no, it doesn't matter. Right? And the renunciate should not save at all. Right? That's the point. So then, the one is saving for his family, and the other is not saving personally. Right? But they're both engaged in the devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's how you define. So then, however that works out, you don't worry about it. Right? That's why the Vedic culture actually takes purity to be able to take part in it. Because if there's, you know, too much greed and other things, you can't actually take part in it. Like Duryodhana is a disruption to the Varnashram system because his greed is greater than what it should be. His qualification is not as great as his greed. You know what I'm saying? I mean, he's not happy to be in the family of the emperors of the world, so it's maybe he's not directly the emperor, but his cousin is. You know? He's going to be doing fine. He's going to have big tracts of land. He's going to be very prestigious. No, but he has to have it all. And not only that, it's not that he can be the emperor and then the cousin is, you know, then just the junior. No, it's got to, he has to have everyone, and the cousin has to not exist. Right? So that's the problem. So it's a disruption. So he's not actually pure enough to function properly in the Vedic system. Right? So we'll put it on expertise and money and those kind of things. That's the qualification for social, structure or hierarchy or control or authority. But it's not. It's purity. Purity and knowledge. Detachment. Does that make sense? So then one will over-endeavor someplace he shouldn't. Right? Does that make sense? Yes.
Nice to look at the concept of presentation. There is no place for lamentation.
There's no place for lamentation.
So can,
yes.
can we say that prayasa and lamentation are connected?
And prayasa and lamentation are connected, yes. The more you endeavor on the material platform, the more you'll suffer. It's direct. Yeah, you could put E equals M E. Right? No, excuse me. P equals M E. Right? So you're your endeavor is going to be how much you suffer. Because your suffering is going to be balanced with your gain. You gain more, you suffer more. You gain less, you suffer less. But the point is for the person who gains less and suffers less, that suffering is still very great. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is then that you gain more, but then your suffering is more. Right? You know, it's just like, how you say, someone is used to more facilities, to have any less than that in facilities is a great suffering. Someone who's used to a small amount of facilities, then he'd be comfortable. He'd be really luxurious in what the other guy was saying. There's no facilities. But whatever is his facilities he's used to, if it's a little less than that, then he'll have a problem. You know what I'm saying? So the point is it's an illusion to think if I get more facilities, I'll be happy. It just means more facilities means more facility to be unhappy. You know what I'm saying? You have one house, you have one mortgage. You have two houses, you have two mortgages, like that. So you increase your pleasure, you increase your problems. Does that make sense? They're balanced. There's a time when it's going one way, and because the nature of the soul, we saw before, those illusions, the Vaikuntha Brahma, he will think the material world's eternal, so therefore now this happy situation will go eternally. Right? And then when it swings the other way, then this unhappy, that will be eternal. Right? Does that make sense? So, that's the problem. But if one looks at it, naturally, no, how much it goes one is how much it will go the other. So, if you're not endeavoring for the mundane, you won't suffer. Yes, Arjuna is lamenting because he has so much. right? Very great, very powerful, and that therefore he's suffering so much. Does that make sense? It's connected to Krishna. Then we see at the end of Gita, same situation. He's not suffering. Because now it's, before it was prayasa. Now it's not. Now it's devotional service. Situation didn't change. Right? The external. Yes.
Question on the position of the Vanaprastha in the modern concept. Would he be considered a renunciate, or if he had a super nature, would it be accepted that he would keep some job to maintain himself?
I mean, one was very general and then it suddenly turned very specific. The point is, vanaprastha means you're not trying to expand, you're not trying to develop. You're just maintaining. You know, so whatever works and maintains, that's all that one's doing. You know, so if that has a job, this and that, then it goes. But it's, he's not trying to, so in other words, where he could, where when he was younger, he'd be working on things and getting more opportunities or moving up. Now he won't, he doesn't do that. You know, in other words, how much time he puts in, that's all he puts. If there's any way to put less, then and he'll do it. So all the time left over before on, you know, having lunches with people and making arrangements and talking on the phone and emailing and all these things to make his situation better, all that time he doesn't have to do that. Now all that time he can use for sadhana. That's the point. So it's a mentality, not so much the change in the situation. Right? You know. But it would be, if it's in the household, then it's he's not technically taking care of the children anymore. They're taking care of themselves. So if he's in the house with the children run the place. Basically. That would be the normal thing. But he may have his thing and he does, you know, whatever he's doing. You understand? All these are mentalities. That's why I say grihasta, right? It's an ashram. He's a householder. So he has his house, he engages that in the Lord's service.
You don't
make it uncomfortable, but you're not trying to make things comfortable. Right? Prabhupada defines comfortable means it's not uncomfortable. That's what I was saying is for different individuals, that may be very different. You know what I'm saying? So somebody, he has many cars, but you know, he doesn't bother with the, you know, the Hummer and the Ferrari anymore. Right? Therefore you get the monk who sold his Ferrari. Yes?
There's a person that's traveling and preaching that sees a lot of the devotees in the welfare system. He's inclined to preach to the devotees to get stable economically, because from that position they can make some, you know, the not any
The point is if, see, is the position of welfare is for two classes of persons. One is the unfortunate that they can't somehow maintain themselves any way. They lack the skills or the ability or something like that, you know. And the other would be the person who's engaged in full-time service. So they don't have time for a separate occupation. But in either case, both of those can be engaged in full-time service. So if one is on welfare, the dole, one should be doing full-time service. But if one is on government money and not doing anything, then that's actually cheating. Because the point is someone, you have to make an endeavor. You have to pull your own weight. Otherwise, why should the rest of the society take care? What are you offering? You know what I'm saying? You know, you have to be doing something. Or you're a basket case, and so what can you do? We had a god brother who was considered clinical, that he couldn't do a job. So they pay him money, or they call it crazy money, right? He was considered nuts. And the funny thing is, he used to take the money, and when he'd get it, he had a fireplace, you know, it wouldn't be any fire there. They'd just throw it in the fireplace, because he didn't really need the money like that. And then after a long time, there's a ton of money there, and then I think he became a devotee, and then he figured out, well, now we can use it for Krishna. So he went and collected all the money in the fireplace, you know. It's a lot of money there. So then... the funny is, just the story came up, and it says this, the person I'm talking about is from Hawaii. Originally from New York, so... It means you have all the stock markets of the world, you know, and all that, and then, you know, and of that, then there's Wall Street, right, you know, and then you have the people that work on it, but then there's the guys on the floor, you know, the guys in the suits are on the floor. They're the ones that really, you know, and then the guys up in the top are another thing, another rung up. But they're the ones that actually make the stock market work. Very, very clever, very sharp, very aggressive, like that. So this devotee I'm talking about, he used to be one of those. And so one day it just kind of hit him, what am I doing? So he just walked out and ended up in Hawaii and lived in a cave, right? Like that. So I think going from that to Hawaii, then the government considered he was crazy, so then they paid him. Nobody goes from, you know, just don't do that, right, you know. Okay. The more he worships the Lord with humility and simplicity, the more he will understand Krishna by his mercy. If one takes shelter of the holy names with humility, then by the mercy of the Lord, without prayasha, all knowledge of the absolute truth that should be known awakens within the heart of the simple devotee. This knowledge is never attained by independent prayasha. So that means you can study all you want, you still won't know what you'll know, that if you're humble and please the Lord in that way, then you'll know more. Because the point is, if you know Krishna, then you know everything. Right? So that's the point. Is that it's like we see Gaurakishore as Babaji Maharaj, right? It means any scholar could go to him and discuss and get answers. But he was known for not being able to read. You know, whether he could read or not, that's another thing. But he was known for not reading, being illiterate. Right? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada describes prayasha as follows. Collecting and eating more than necessary also causes prayasha, or unnecessary endeavor. By God's arrangement, anyone in any part of the world can live very peacefully if he has some land and a milk cow. There is no need for man to move from one place to another to earn a livelihood. For one can produce food grains locally and get milk from cows. That can solve all economic problems. Fortunately, man has been given higher intelligence for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, or the understanding of God, one's relationship with him, and the ultimate goal of life. Right here. So understanding of God, relationship with God, and the ultimate goal of life. So the Abhideya, the Sambandha, and the Prayojana. Right? So Prabhupada will always mention these. Unfortunately, so-called civilized man, not caring for God's realization, utilizes his intelligence to get more than necessary and simply eat to satisfy the tongue. By God's arrangement, there is sufficient scope for the production of milk and grains for human beings all over the world. But instead of using this higher intelligence to cultivate God consciousness, so-called intelligent men misuse their intelligence to produce many unnecessary and unwanted things. Thus, factories, slaughterhouses, brothels, and liquor shops are open. If people are advised not to collect too many goods, eat too much, or work unnecessarily, to possess artificial amenities, they think they are being advised to return to a primitive way of life. Even though we require economic development, true religion allows it only for supplying the bare necessities of material existence. Jivasya tattva jigyasa. The real purpose of life is to inquire about the absolute truth. If our endeavor, prayasha, is not to inquire about the absolute truth, we will simply increase our endeavor to satisfy our artificial needs. Spiritual aspirants should avoid mundane endeavor. In other words, the simple lifestyle affords whatever one requires because the balanced time is used for Krishna consciousness. One's inspired in that. But because modern man is not inspired in these things, then so many other things are required. Right? And so then that requires so much facility and all that. And then that expands. Your unnecessary factories, all these other things come up. And then it just creates a hellish environment. So a few people get more. And then a whole bunch of people are told they can get more if they work really hard and get the money. But the ones who's actually getting the more is the people who are engaging them. Like that. And one may complain and say, well, make it all equal. No, it'll always be like that. Because the point is one who's clever, he'll always come out on top. That's the way it is. It's not going to be anything else. So unless there's qualities that will come from devotional service, then there can be the proper thing of everybody being taken care of properly, because then there's not excess. Right? If the passion is slowed down, the ignorance is removed, then the simple lifestyle is very satisfying, because the point is, why have money and facility? It's for family and friends. But if you don't have time for family and friends because you're so busy getting money, you know what I'm saying? Now it's socially considered okay if the person is single that they absorb themselves in occupation and that's all they do and become very expert at it, make lots of money, they have great, fabulous facility. You know? Like that. But you know, there's no family. You know, so that's because they're unable to function in the family. They don't know how to use it. So it's an escape. Otherwise, the normal thing is to share. Yes.
It seems to me that Atyahara is just a part of Prayasa.
It's the principle is that you're making endeavor to collect more than you need. Right? It means to overeat, it takes work. Overeating is not for the lazy fellow, right? You know, because it's hard work. You know what I'm saying? Then you have to digest, you know, find a place to sleep, not get disturbed while you sleep, avoid having to do your work so you can sleep. I mean, there's a lot going on here.
You have to manage the food.
You have to manage the food. You have to manage it. It's on your plate and not on someone else's plate. Yeah, a lot of work. Okay. See, because Atyaha, they're breaking it down. It's a similar kind of thing, but it's different because the one is the eating and that you don't necessarily, it's there, you're eating. Right? Food's there. It's not so much of an over-endeavor to reach over and get a little more of something or ask for something or that. But it's, of course, it is, but anything's an over-endeavor. Technically speaking, breathing, if you're not a devotee, is over-endeavor. Right? That's why it says that the breathing of the non-devotees is like the bellows, you know? Like that. But they breathe very heartily, you know? Like that. No asthma, nothing. They're doing quite good. But it doesn't have, there's no life, you know? So, But the other one is you're endeavoring in knowledge, in work in that, and that's a constant thing. You know, so you're constantly having to work and think about that. It means if the person sits around and all day thinks about food and how to get food and how to eat food and how to collect food, that would be prayasha. Right? Does that make sense? But you get something. You know, somebody gives you something. And then slowly, slowly, after a while, you have a lot of things that people have given you. You know what I'm saying? So now, is that, do you need that? If you require it, you keep it. If it's more than what you require, you give it away. But you haven't endeavored for it. You know what I'm saying? So the point is that the eating and the over-collecting may come from not even endeavor. You know what I'm saying? You go out begging, or somebody gives you food, but they give you more than you can eat. So do you eat it, or do you give it away? You understand? So though they are connected, they're all in the same category, but at the same time as they have their specifics where they're being applied. Is that okay?
When I moved to India, we had a realization that before we thought we were choosing insurance and paying the car installments, we were choosing things for ourselves. When we got here, we got rid of them. The realization was just feeding this gigantic dinosaur, like these great companies, and we were the guys feeding them. And now we didn't need it anymore.
So that's the meaning of independence. We don't understand what independent means. We generally think it's whatever I feel like, I can do it without anybody getting in the way. But independent means you're not dependent upon others. Does that make sense? So then you're not part of the scene. Yes.
So, if people are experiencing suffering in the pursuit of emotional service, and how does one work on that situation?
It means the suffering coming within devotional service, basically it means that one's impurities are being addressed. Because if something's for, if one has great attachment or great affection, then the endeavors is not seen as a suffering. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, the mother, you know, is happy, you know, changing the diapers on the baby, you know, but then if, you know, suddenly you end up with the baby and she's off, you know, talking to her friends about the spa, then it's a suffering.
Depending on the color, it can be a different grade. Depending on the color, which is inside, it can be a different grade of suffering.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's all kinds of detail. I think you're speaking from experience here. Okay, yeah.
Whereas the mother regards it as sandalwood.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's just, the point is that, that's what I'm saying, if attachment, affection, these things, then the obstacle isn't an obstacle. It only becomes an obstacle as you reduce those things. So all it is that if one was doing that for oneself, one might not see it as an obstacle or suffering. But since one's not doing it for yourself, and we haven't developed that love for Krishna, then we're able to notice the obstacles that are there and the difficulties that come up. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah, so that's all. So it's just a matter, it makes us aware of that there's something there that in ourselves is not necessarily right. It doesn't mean there won't be difficulties like that. It means that we won't suffer from those difficulties like that. That's the difficulty. We take it that there's no suffering means there's no difficulties. So if there's any difficulties, then there's a problem because the suffering comes from the difficulty. So we'll take it. Krishna consciousness means no suffering, so no difficulties. So if any difficulties come up in Krishna consciousness, there's something wrong with the Krishna consciousness. No, it's actually just, all it is there's something wrong with us. We're still, the impurities are still there, so that there's a, does that make sense? So a spiritual aspirant should avoid mundane endeavor, right? If it's spiritual endeavor, that's not a problem. Mundane, that's what you want to do. Because mundane means it's not connected to Krishna. Right? 3. Summary of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's essay on Prajalpa, Idle Talk. Talking with one another is called jalpana or prajalpa. Nowadays in this world, godlessness is so prominent that conversing with others means godless talk. Remember, this is circa 1850. Right? Like that. No, it's nothing new. That's the thing. We think there's that. The other day I was talking with somebody, you know, who's a bit of a history buff and stuff like that. The concept of apartment buildings comes from the Romans. You know, like that. And he would specifically was looking at, what's his name, Caesar. So when Caesar was a kid, I forget what it was, is Caesar's mother's father was some big guy. You know, a big general or somebody very prominent. And something happened to the father. I don't know what happened. Maybe he died or something like that. And so then, but his grandfather gave to his mother a seven-story apartment building in Rome. You know, so it wasn't uncommon. The only difference then is that the person who owned the place lived on the ground floor. You know, instead of on the top floor, because they didn't have elevators. So it's like, you know, the other guys live, you know, so it gets cheaper as you go up rather than as you go down, right? You know, so that was the only difference. So so apartment buildings, those were standard then, you know. So many things, stock market, all these other things that we take now as a modern. So now those were then. You know, because we went from houses, you know, and then it gets tighter than apartment buildings come up. But the point was is, you know, Italy's, you know, the size of, you know, it's not necessarily a big place in comparison, you know, like that. So then as people get more compacted, naturally then apartment buildings come up. So all it meant was Rome was very packed. That's all. So if there's more people want to live in a smaller place, you make apartment buildings. And if there's less people live in a bigger place, then they make houses. You know? But we think it's a modern phenomenon. It's always been there.
They probably didn't have steel rods, so they fell down. They haven't got any relics, any fossils on them.
No, there's plenty. You drive through. Yeah, I mean, you still have remnants of all kinds of things. That's the thing, when you drive through Rome, it's full of. Still standing? Yeah, no, there's a lot of stuff there. But point was just that there's nothing new. We think there's something new, but there's nothing new. Like that. But if we think there's absolutely nothing new, it's all old, then we lose our enthusiasm. So, like that. So, that's where we put emphasis on the devotional cultivation. The other one, we make it clear so that one doesn't try to do both at once. All prajalpas that are unfavorable to Krishna's service are adverse to devotional service. The practitioner should carefully give up prajalpa. There can, however, be many kinds of jalpana in the cultivation of devotional service. They are all auspicious for the devotees. Right? So it appears that talking with one another is called jalpana or prajalpa. So jalpana seems to be what's useful, and prajalpa means what is not useful. Or it's jalpana is what gets by, it's useful, you know, like using your lawnmower or something. Sometimes puffed up devotees argue that all kinds of prajalpa should be given up. This is not supported by the Mahajans, such as Srila Vyasadeva, Sukadeva Goswami, Prahlad Maharaj, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and his associates, who always engaged in talks connected to Krishna. Therefore, the favorable prajalpa should be accepted as instructed by the authorities.
Why would they interfere with prajalpa?
Because it's just prajalpa. Jalpa is, pra means just it's more, you know, it's more emphasized, more intense. Like, hlada means happiness or pleasure. So prahlada means, you know, greater happiness. The thing is it's like endeavor. Prayasha, remember, it would be used. Prayasha means you're endeavoring in Krishna consciousness, but if it's not in Krishna consciousness, useless. So the prajalpa connected to Krishna is fine, the prajalpa not connected to Krishna is not. So that's the difficulty, is that we have a tendency to think that, or to take it that something devotional has no connection at all in form, in endeavor, in mechanics, anything with something, you know, material and spiritual are two different things. But the point is that living life is supposed to be the natural, existence of the living entity in its pursuance of service of the Lord. Right? But if he gives up serving the Lord, it's not that concept of life, that of his lifestyle changes. I'm saying, like in Vrindavan. So, I mean, as far as the pastime goes, then everybody is all renunciates, right? No? No, they're all grihastas, right? Family, they're vaishyas, they have their occupation, they're paying tax, they're selling things. Gopis, when they're walking on the road with the yogurt on their heads, where are they going? To sell it. They're going to the market. Right? And then Krishna comes and steals it. Right? It means they're going to the market so there's an opportunity so Krishna can steal it. But the point is they're going to the market so that where if he steals it, they can get angry. Because if they were just carrying it just so that he would come and steal it, their anger couldn't be so good. Right? It wouldn't be as convincing. Right? So, less taste. Right? So, the point is it's all going on. Are there parents? Right? Is that, and the parents consist of a husband in a masculine form and a wife in a feminine form. Right? Yes? Children are younger than the parents. Right? 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 Nanda Baba has a beard. The younger kids don't have beards. Right? The men have beards, the women don't. Right? Yeah? Does that make sense? Cows eat grass. Cows give milk. Trees give fruit. Sun shines. Moon shines. Stars shine. Birds fly. Fish swim. Right? So, isn't it? Now, what if all that's not connected to Krishna? It's the material world. So the point is we have this idea that the lifestyle of the Vaishnava is something different then would be the materialist. In the spiritual world, something else. That's why it gets confusing. So the point is it comes back again. Discussions amongst devotees connected to Krishna are useful. Discussions not connected to Krishna aren't useful. Right? Endeavor connected to Krishna is useful. Endeavor not connected to Krishna is not useful. Right? Does that make sense? Right. Eating connected to Krishna is useful. Eating not connected to Krishna, or at least volumes not necessarily connected to Krishna, is not useful. It means the prasad is connected. Is that make sense? Yeah.
Where it comes from that we want to make such a distinction between material
Mayavad philosophy. Because Mayavad is that if material has form, form, senses, emotions, relationships, activities, results, pleasure, pain, then spiritual, because it's not material, can't have any of these. Therefore, there's just nothingness. So that's where we come up. His question before on, you know, we just try to make everything equal. These are all coming from that. We can't understand individuals, they do different things. They have no problem. You know what I'm saying? Madhamangal is a Brahmin. So he doesn't need to have the facilities and all that Krishna has. And he's not worried about it. This is a Brahman. What do you need it for? You know what I'm saying? But Krishna has it, so then that's nice. Does that make sense? So this ability to be able to appreciate that, you know, in other words, what is useful and what's not. Does that make sense? Otherwise, we just follow the rule. Okay, this therefore is not useful. But then the problem is you never know. Godless prajalpas are impediments to devotional service. There was commentary. It says Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes in his book Prema Pradeep. Oh, this on the next page is from that. Okay. From Prema Pradeep. And this is on favorable prajalpa. Babaji, we have heard that Mahabhagavatas remain intoxicated, relishing the sweet topics of Lord Hari. They don't engage in discussions on karma or jnana. Why then does our most worshipable Pandit Das Babaji spend his time on such topics? Haridas Babaji said, Babaji, such a doubt also arose in my atheistic mind. But when I heard those discussions in Pandit Das Babaji's holy association, I came to know that all the devotees' discussions on karma and jnana are nothing but Hari Katha. That's a very nice way of doing it. Instead of saying, yes, this point you're making is atheistic. It says, yes, like that. At one time, I also thought in this atheistic way. You know, I got distracted by this atheistic way. I think Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one thing they were talking about in the preaching, it'll be very difficult and all that, because they were engaging people in a certain way. And he said, yes, thousands of lifetimes ago, I used to think like that. Either that or he said it the opposite. He says, no, for thousands of lifetimes, I've been doing it this way. You know. That's the one I've always heard, but when I read it the other day, it seemed to be the other one. Like that. So but it means the same thing. It means thousands of lifetimes ago, he switched from one to the other. Such discussions are nothing like the topics discussed by the materialists, which simply agitate the mind. Rather, by hearing such discussions in the association of the devotees, the living entities are freed from the bondage of karma and jnana. So this discussions, technical discussions on how karma and jnana work and how to purify them in the proper performance of one's duties, right? To see what is the impurity, what is the useful, right? To be able to make that distinction like that. So those discussions are useful. But just to discuss karma or jnana without its connection to the devotional application, then that basically is useless. So he's saying here is that they're only discussing the sweet topics of Hari, meaning pastimes and his qualities. Like, so nice. But at the same time, is the element of retraction is also important. Because otherwise, then one may be listening now, but then later one will do something not so good. Okay, so we did it. So, godless prajalpas are impediments to devotional service. They are of many types. Useless talks, arguments, gossip, debates, fault-finding in others, speaking falsehoods, blaspheming devotees, and worldly talk are all called prajalpa. It's quite a good list.
Debates,
yes. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura writes in his commentaries on Sri Manasiksha. Like prostitutes, mundane subjects plunder a man's knowledge and his resolve. A prostitute cunningly relieves her customers of their riches, and mundane talks rob a man of his wealth of knowledge. After all, one's predilection for spiritual upliftment is his only treasure, and such a treasure is everything to the sincere transcendentalist. Grossly materialistic subject matters and dealings with topics unrelated to the absolute truth plunder this treasure because they are unreal, illusory, and temporary. Dabbling in scriptural injunctions that deal only with temporary and mundane goals, such as greed for wealth, close association with women, or keeping the company of people overly attached to women, are considered gross materialistic activities. Any desire for association with such activities is tantamount to mundane talk. Right. So here, even we're talking about the scriptural injunctions that deal with, you know, the overemphasis on arta, yeah, arta kama. Yeah, basically, arta kama. Okay, useless talks. That was useless. Those points, you know. In other words, using things that for a material purpose. Arguments, gossip, debates, fault-finding, speaking falsehoods, blaspheming devotees, and worldly talk. Right? Interesting. Arguments and then debates, right? And then fault-finding and blaspheming devotees. You know, so it's like each one's going a little bit more deep. Useless talk is extremely detrimental. Sadhakas should discuss topics related to Krishna without wasting time. For the practicing devotee to read newspapers or novels is a great loss. But if there are topics about pure devotees described in the newspaper or in the novel, then reading is not an impediment. Rather, it is beneficial. Right? Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had newspapers, magazines, and novels. Right? So then devotees had something they could read. Argument is a prajalpa that is adverse to devotional service. All the arguments of the followers of Nyaya and Vaisheshika are simply godless quarrels. They do not yield any result other than wasting the mind's strength and increasing one's restlessness. In the Vedas, Katha Upanishad 1:29, it is said, quote, "This intelligence cannot be obtained by argument." End quote. On the other hand, if such deliberations are based on the Vedas, that is no longer prajalpa. That is why in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 12:182, by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who said, "In the association of the jackals known as logicians, I simply continued to bark a resounding bew bew. Now, from the same mouth, I am chanting the holy names Krishna and Hari." Because for them, it's the logicness of it. It makes sense, that's all. And so whoever feels that they have a better understanding or presentation of logic, how it logically should be, then they'll consider that more important. Right? Because that's all you're trying to establish. It's not a matter, you're not trying to come to conclusion. You're not trying to understand what it's for. So, therefore, if one's discussing the same thing based on the Shastra, right? And so in this case, Sensi mentioned Nyaya and Vaisheshika. They're based on the Vedas. So this would mean based on, you know, the Siddhanta of Shastra. Then you have something else, right? Then that'll be devotion. That is why in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 25:153, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given the instruction, quote, "Study Srimad Bhagavatam very scrutinizingly," end quote. It is certainly one's duty to give up logician's association. Now, we just read this. But we missed that paragraph. I went from this intelligence to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Okay. Bew, bew. That's regular jackals. Here they chant Gaura, Gaura. Like that. They have their own dialect, but okay. Useless arguments arise from envy or pride, aversion or attachment to sense gratification, or foolishness or self-pride. Quarrelsome people also become intoxicated by useless arguments. While discussing topics of the Lord and his devotees, the practicing devotee should always be careful to avoid useless arguments, right? Because when the argument goes, right, when it's at a certain level, then you look at it in a certain way, right? But when it gets going too much, then, you know, the broad generalizations, the, you know, I don't care for anybody, this is the way it is, bring anyone you want, it's going to be like, you know, it, you understand? It means one is intoxicated, one's become intoxicated by the argument. Because intoxication means you're not actually aware of things, and that's so much. So then that starts to happen, right? So therefore one can become intoxicated by arguments. Johnny Tai, sir. Johnny Tai. Shaki Naga. Well, as long as it's not Shaki Stali, then we might have something. But if it's Shaki Stali, forget it. Shaki Naga. Okay, thank you. How do you? Come with Kurma Chaitanya, who's also an architect, so let's see. I wonder who they are. Because people generally only notice certain things. Like, generally, nobody comes to the building and then says something about the architecture, unless they know something about architecture. Talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service, right? So that's gossip. Okay, useless talks, arguments. Now gossip is talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. You don't have any, it's just, oh, did you hear, you know? This one's off with that one, and that one did this to that one, and that one did, you know, like that. It's like you don't have any connection, it doesn't have any meaning in your life. You know, it's not that you're responsible. It's not something that you're trying to learn from it. It's just something to talk about, right? Something new, right? You know, right. Otherwise, weather is getting boring. You know, like that. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, even though they are about others. Only the devotee renunciates can give up talks about others completely. But because the householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. When all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk with others becomes sinless and part of devotional service in relation to Krishna. In other words, he's got to talk about something, right? Because he has a family and his kid's going to come and say, you know, at the school, and this one said this and that one said that, and you have to say something to make them feel okay and like that. So it's basically prajalpa. But because you're responsible to take care of the kid and protect, therefore your protection of the child, therefore in that protected environment they'll be able to take up Krishna consciousness, you have to put up with that. You know, it's just the way it goes. It's part of the scene. Right? Now if you can connect all those things nicely to Krishna, then you reduce that. But there is stuff that it's not necessary. You know what I'm saying? You know, does that make sense? The family member is not, you know, upset about something or like this and that, then that you're just sitting around and talking about the, you know, this one, this and that one, that. That's useless. Does that make sense? But there is the basically talk about others, but it's connected with what you're doing, so therefore it has to be continued with, right?
So,
Srila
Prabhupada, talking about the Merchant of Venice,
does
that kind of fall into this?
The Merchant of Venice. Because what do we learn from the Merchant of Venice? What's the point?
Well, as Prabhupada explained it, apparently there was really no point. Like, when you know it, it was just...
No, I mean, there's maybe no point in discussing it because they don't really come to a Krishna conscious point. But the point is what is the weakness in the Merchant of Venice? What's his... I mean, is he wrong? He is an usurer. He has given a loan. And that loan means you have to have a contract when you're going to get it back. Right? And whatever is that contract, that is the binding thing. So he said, you know, he wants his money by this time or a pound of flesh. The other person agreed to it. Technically, is he wrong? Not at all. He's 100% right. But the point is that he's missing the point is that one's doing business to make money so that one can interact socially and all. That means he makes his money by that. The other guy that he loaned it to makes his money by buying and selling goods, but through bringing them by ship. So he has to, means he's buying it from someplace far off and transporting it and all that. So his ship sank or something, I don't remember. They didn't show up. Something happened. So that would mean then, so that's what one person does and the other person does this. That's why banking is not recommended. You know what I'm saying? Because then you'll have to deal more roughly with people. Then the guy who's selling merchandise has to deal very nicely with you, right? Customer's always right, you're always sweet and nice. But a banker, to be successful, can never deal nicely with you. You'll take advantage. So that's why it's not the recommended. Trade is more recommended than banking. You understand? So now, but so he's seeing this and missing the point of making the money. He's taking the occupation as the ultimate thing rather than the principles of qualities that come from the development of the ashram. Right? And from what is understood, he seems to be a practicing Orthodox Jew. So then the problem is he overdoes this, that even his own community feels that he's, you know, gone over the line. And the others considered, you know, are saying that, well, if, you know, and they being externalists saying, well, if this is what it means to be Jewish, you know, better you become Christian, then you'll have that nice, you know, all things like that. Then, you know, instead of taking the pound of flesh, you'll burn them at the stake or, you know, something else more humane, right? You know, like that. So that would be the point is that it's like the smarter who follows the rule and misses the point that the rule is for a purpose. That's the element that is there. You understand? So all these things, they have their point. So if you can use it, it's just very well done and things like that. But at the same time, as we do have others, but it works really nicely in the Western environment.
The Shri Prabhupada was telling that, and at that time it seemed like, well, what's the point of them telling it?
Yeah, because one is, except for Rabindra Sarup, who's read Shakespeare, right? You know, so then, it's kind of like, shake, you know, like that. You know, so it's like, you know, yeah. But the point is he's getting across the thing, showing how practical is there, you know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like the whole thing of how the husband deals with the wife. He'll say the wife is not submissive, but it's not her, it's how you deal with her. Right? Therefore the story of taming of the shrew. You know what I'm saying? That's so very well done, you know, things like that. I mean, they're poetic and all this and that, you know. But at the same time is it doesn't get to the point of Krishna consciousness. So you have to do that, because otherwise just it on its own is just as mundane as anything else, you know. Does that make sense?
So the point of the study, he could be more merciful, right?
He could, but the point is in other words, it's not a pound of flesh. In other words, make the thing that, you know, means legally that, you know, the local, whoever's the local authority would be breathing down his neck to, you know, like that. That would be the thing. But to demand his pound of flesh, because it is a contract, he can take it technically. No one's saying he can't take it. But no one's wanting him to take it. Right? And at the same time, we also learn that from Niti, if you're clever and you have a strategy, you'll always overcome somebody who's functioning on emotion. Does that make sense? Because the lawyer who came
right? Because that's direct niti. The lawyer who came then argued on logic and had a plan. Well, he just had the emotion that he was going to be involved and the others were going to get. Does that make sense? And the other, then the final point, you know, you get from that is that don't take the women of your value lightly. In other words, the women you value, don't take them lightly. You know what I'm saying? Because if you do, then you get in trouble. So the girl came dressed as the boy who was the lawyer. Got him out of the problem. But then later when he goes, no, thank you and all that, she's not going to talk to him because he's not dealing problem. You know, so there's so many things, but the difficulty is they only observe things and put them together as interesting things. They don't actually know the science behind it. Devotees do. Does that make sense? So the point is connected to Krishna becomes useful, but we can get those same stories in the Vedic literatures. We don't have to go there, but the point it's like you get all these things you can go. There's so many. You know, because a person is just very clever and has observed the material energy and puts it together. His expression is through drama. Someone else does it through some other thing. So that's all it is. How well you observe and how well you can document, you know, what you've observed so others can understand it, that makes it, you know, valuable knowledge. But the point is what they've observed, they don't understand the source of what they're seeing. That's why it's called avidya. So it's not that the study of the knowledge itself is the problem, it's that you're not seeing what is the source of that knowledge, what makes the knowledge work. You know, it would be like taking a 4-year course studying a blender and never at any time discussing electricity or running it. You know what I'm saying? Now, for the common person who all there is that thing, is, you know, you put the thing in there and, you know, you put stuff in there and you take a stick and you kind of like go around like this and then it slowly kind of cuts everything up. You know, like that. If you do that for a while and possibly we found that also if you smush a bit and then go around that it works even better, right? You know? And then somebody's developed another thing where he puts, you know, there's three blades like that. So he's made a 3-tong thing that comes up and has like a, you know, what do you call it? Those gears on it, and he has this thing and he turns it like this, and then that makes the thing go around, and he's improved the efficiency, you know how you say, you know, 73.2%, you know, like that. So all this is going on, but someone who knows what a real blender, how it works, will say all this knowledge is useless. So that's what Prabhupada is talking about. And we'll say no, but you can use it like this. You can, but the point is unless it's connected to Krishna, because our attachment is to the knowledge itself and to the material benefits it gets, not to that it's another way you can serve Krishna. You understand? There's a difference there. So that's the difficulty. Does that make sense? Okay. Saying the next verse is one of those. Good ones. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.